Hi, this is Christopher Munden and John Rosenberg. You're listening to our first podcast of Philadelphia Independent Theatre Talk. We sat down recently to talk to Jennifer Summerfield, a talented local actor. I first saw her on stage in one of my favorite plays, Connor McPherson's The Weir at Curio Theatre Company, where for a long time she was company member and where she'll next appear on stage beginning March 20th in the premiere of Paul Kuhn's Madville. I've since seen Jennifer on stage dozens of times at theatres across the city. One of my favorite roles was her as Jo in Alpe d'Huez, written and starring my fellow presenter, John Rosenberg. John started off by asking Jennifer about the auditioning process.
Are you nervous like when you audition?
Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Pretty much, yeah, every time. It's very nerve-wracking.
More than going on stage?
It's probably pretty equivalent, actually.
It's a different type of
nerve. And it actually, let me qualify that. It really depends on whether they're asking for a monologue or reading from the script.
Which do you prefer?
I prefer reading from the script. Because when you prepare a monologue, it's like you don't know if it's what they're looking for, really. I mean, I've always tried to tailor it for what the project is. So if it's an Oscar Wilde play, I'll try to find an Oscar Wilde monologue or a George Bernard Shaw. You know, I try to find something that's appropriate for what they're looking for. But that actually might add to my nerves, because often I'm going in with a fairly new monologue.
Because you've tried to tailor it.
Yeah. I did one at the Walnut. It was for An Ideal Husband. I chose a monologue from Caesar and Cleopatra by George Bernard Shaw. It was a really cute monologue. But she laughed, the woman laughed, and it totally threw me off, because I had never done it in front of anyone before, so I wasn't.
Sometimes the audience laughs.
Sometimes they do.
And you have to be prepared.
I think that's why directors often, when they're having rehearsals, they laugh too much, because they want the cast to be used to the idea that somebody is
really
going to laugh. Yeah.
Oh, that's really stupid. I'm supposed to laugh, like, to
it's encouragement.
To, like, get them ready.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just in case people do laugh.
But the downside of that is if the audience doesn't laugh. I mean, you're like, oh, let me repeat that line.
Oh, so it's more you guys want whatever you don't get.
Okay, sure. You can't win.
I didn't know that. So in the future, like, in parts that are designed to be funny, you should laugh to kind of, like, give the actors time to be ready for laughter.
Just to really, just to find the moments that are funny. It's hard to, I mean, I think it's just also a way just to say that you're on the right track. Because as an actor, sometimes it's hard, like, you're trying new things, and if you don't really get a response, you don't know whether it's worked or not.
You know, some actors, like, want to have fun at rehearsal, or
I feel like in the current play I'm rehearsing at Curio, I feel kind of like everybody else is having a great time, and I'm the, like, wet blanket. Even though I'm not having a miserable time, it's just,
you want to
it's
take
hard
it
for me to do, like, the idle chit-chat between.
Is it the same group?
Yeah, the same group. So I've worked with them forever, and I was just there the other night, and I'm thinking, what's wrong with me? Like, why am I not more chit-chatty and gregarious? And it's just not my style. It's not who I am.
What's the play?
It's a new play by Paul that he wrote about his childhood. He's the father, and I'm the mother. It's a little weird.
Wow.
I think the mother's going to see it, and I'm a little nervous about having the mom in the audience. Apparently she's read the play, but she doesn't realize it's her, which seems really odd to me, because he's basically verbatim used incidents from his childhood in the play, including the name of his childhood imaginary land that they had.
It doesn't necessarily mean it's her.
It's true. I mean,
he could have said
this is fictionalized.
You'll be able to tell real quick if it's based on her or if it's not.
Yeah. John wrote a play based on his mom.
And she liked the play, but she didn't like
it. No, she hated it.
She hated the whole play.
She said she liked it.
At the time, I mean, I didn't talk to her for, like, a while. Like, she just cried when we got in the car afterwards.
I loved the role of the mother in that, though.
Right.
I thought she was so cool.
Joe.
Joe. Evan.
Joe.
Evan. Surprise! I did the reader book.
No red block.
I thought I did the reader book.
No red
block. I did the reader
block. I knocked on the door.
Surprise! I was supposed to get in tomorrow, but...
Right. No, so that was actually interesting to me, because I guess as an actress, the life of a play inside of you. Do you know what I mean? There seems to me like almost like there's like a mercenary quality to you. Come, you do the job, and then like you move on.
Well, it really depends. I mean, each play is different.
Right.
And I liked Alpe d'Huez because of the pacing of it, and it was very instinctual. Like, the motivations were pretty clear throughout. It felt like kind of riding a wave after wave, and then I could leave it behind. You know, it wasn't...
But, so what plays really stick with you?
One of the plays, I did it in college, and it was so difficult to leave it behind, was Dancing at Melissa by Brian Friel, Irish playwright.
What is that?
It's set in the 30s in Ireland, and it's kind of a memory play, and it's narrated by this adult, Michael, who remembers his childhood in this desolate farm in Ireland in the 30s when they had nothing. There's no father figure, it's the five sisters who live there. And it's a very emotional play, and the relationships between the sisters are all very, very strong. And I just felt, it was the first time where I felt a real connection with other actors on stage. And I felt like we had this bond that would never be broken. And then when the play was over, everybody kind of went off and did their own thing. And I was devastated because I was like, I've lost my sisters. Like, it felt like that. Like, I lost this family. And I think it was a meaningful play for everyone. I mean, it was a beautiful play, and we had this amazing set designer who built an Irish farm, and he had turf on the stage and grass, and it was like this knoll, and there was a tree branch that came out over the house, and the house was this cutaway open kitchen. Just, it felt like you were in Ireland, and there was a scrim behind the set with a ramp up so that it looked like you could have people on this ramp, and it looked like they were floating in the sky. Because there were clouds painted on the scrim, so it was like just the memory of this family and what they had lost. And it was very moving, very sad.
So you could do an Irish accent?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Right? I mean, you saw the weird Irish accent.
Yeah. I don't remember your Irish accent, but I remember that you would do it. I remember
and
that.
And that's another one. I just feel a strong connection to Irish plays in general, Irish theater.
Why is that?
I just love the language. I love the lyricism of the language. And it's just easy to connect emotionally because the words have such an emotional impact and have this musical quality to them. For The Weir, it was like the first read-through, when I read that monologue out loud, it was just such an emotional impact because that monologue was so beautiful.
What is it that you really look for as an actor?
Ideally, what I look for is the opportunity to play characters who go through some kind of metamorphosis or a change.
Yeah.
Have some kind of dramatic arc. But I also just look for something that has poetry to it.
There's like a beauty of language that you really look for, or something like that. That, I don't know. This is
what puts you off a poet.
I guess I look at the play as a whole, and if the play doesn't have meaning for me, I'm not interested in playing it. If the play doesn't have a hook to it, because there are so many plays out there where it's like you read them and it's just they don't lead anywhere. We don't know what the playwright had in mind, or it's like they need to be workshopped more.
Where for you, like, usually do directors fail?
In just not having a vision, I think. Like, I've worked with directors who don't... You get to the first rehearsal and you realize that they haven't figured out what they want out of the play.
Yeah.
I think it's great when people admit that they don't know something.
Right.
Absolutely. But I've certainly worked with directors who have, like, never had the answer. I don't know. Why don't you go home and think about it and figure it out?
Yeah.
Like, really? You've thought about this play for a year, and this is what you're...
Yeah.
Like, You know, and on the other hand, like, I've worked with great directors who have such a strong feeling about the play, and they know exactly, they know what the picture should look like, and what they want to punch in the play, and the production.
So, like, the final 10 minutes for you before you go on, those 10 to 15 minutes, what are those like for you?
It's not always this way, but generally speaking, I can't socialize during those, you know, it's like I have to, not that I'm, like, deep into, like, method acting preparation or anything, but it's just I go over problem spots in my head, I get the nerves out for my hands, you know.
You don't have a routine?
Not a set routine. I have vocal exercises that I like to do. I like to do a French poem because it's all like that. You know,
what poem? All,
I do a La Fontaine fable.
Is it very personal, or
no.
Do you recite it?
Mm-hmm. La cigale est enchantée tout l'été, se trouve autour des bourrues quand la bise fut venue. Pas un seul petit morceau de bouche ou de danse.
You're listening to Jennifer Summerfield on Philadelphia Independent Theatre Talk.
What does it translate to?
It's the cricket and the ant. The ant, you know, the ant who's industrious and works all summer to...
Obviously, I don't know that animal whatsoever.
Well, I think they made a Disney.
I know the lazy one.
The cricket?
Yes, I'm very familiar with the cricket. But so it's...
But the idea is that he sang all summer, you know, the cricket sang.
And then he asks for some food.
And then he has nothing set aside for the winter.
And the ant tells him
to
go for himself.
Yeah.
Well, the ant does give him some.
No.
No, he just tells him to go for himself.
Yeah.
So who are you? Are you the ant?
She's the ant.
It's very interesting that... It's almost like a lesson, or like.
I like doing it because it's fast. You know, it's French, so it's very souffle-y, and everything is in the front of your mouth, and a lot of, like, you know, vowels and consonants, and it's fun to say, and it gets my mouth moving.
Yeah, where did you pick it up?
I took an acting class when I was a junior in Paris, and they thought my accent was really terrible. So before I could do a scene, they wanted me to perform a favor.
Really?
So I did.
Nice.
And then I did a scene.
I remember one of the, not long after I'd met you, I talked to you at an old Curie opening, and was telling you all about the theory of French literature. Which you studied.
And she was just very gracious about
it.
She
was just like, letting me talk. I was like, have you ever been to France? Like, yeah, I lived there for a year. I studied French. But you didn't want to stop me.
Do you go out there knowing that you're going to have an awesome performance, you're going to have a shitty performance, you're going to have, like, do you know what I mean? Or is it like, you know, the power of positive thinking or something? Or it's not even, you're not even there yet.
It's like, it always, for me, depends on the audience, the energy from the audience, and whether I can forget the fare, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's a weird line, because you want to be aware of that energy from the audience, because it influences what you do. You can't just talk through laughter or talk through things that happen out there. So it's this energy that you react to, but if you're too aware of them, then you're playing to them, or you're, like, the most horrible, for me, experience was when we did No Exit at Curio, and it was in this three-quarter seating arrangement for the audience, and there were three couches that we each sat on, so if you were over here and talking to a character there, you were just so aware of faces on either side of them from the audience, and Toby Zinman was one of those, like, I could see her, like, hairdo, and I wasn't that confident in that play, and so, you know, so it's like to just try to focus so wholeheartedly on the actor and just be aware of this white hairdo. It's horrible. I got off track, but I think my expectation is just to let everything go and to just find those moments of truth in every performance, like the connection with the other actors. That's what I look for, is connecting with the people I'm on stage with.
Yeah.
All of your focus is on the actor you're doing the scene with. Everything you do depends on what that other person gave you, and it has nothing to do with the line. It has to do with what's under the line. So they could say, you have a green shirt on, and if depending on how they say it, like, your shirt is green. You know, it's like, you're responding to the intention under the line.
Absolutely.
as opposed to just saying your line back and saying it neutrally.
There must be productions where you feel they're not coming off as you would like them to come off, whether it's your part or other people's parts or direction. And no, I wonder, like, midway in a run of that, what's going through your head?
I mean, there have definitely been productions where I just, it's hard to go to the theater, it's hard to get into costume, it's a real struggle, and you just kind of wait for closing night.
Is that something you talk about with other people in the cast? Is that...
I have, like, it depends, like, you can get the reading. I was in a show where it was obvious one of the other actresses felt the same way, so we would commiserate and support each other, but not everybody did. Like, some people thought it was the best thing in the world that they had ever done.
Is that feeling just audience reaction, or...
No.
Can you be in a play where you think it's not going well and the audience is into it?
In fact, that same play, it's like the audience is... For months afterwards, I would have people come up to me and say, oh, we saw that, it was so great. And it was like, really? You saw that play that I was in? You saw that production and you thought it was great? Mm. And it got bad reviews. Like, the critics thought it was horrible. But for some reason, the audiences that came, who they really appreciated.
And vice versa, I guess. It must be shows that you've done that you think are going really well and the audience isn't with you.
Yeah.
How important is that to you?
It's actually, I wish it weren't important, but it is.
Well, it should be, right? I mean, it's a relationship with them.
Well, for example, like, the Weir, I think audiences really loved it, but nobody ever, like, stayed afterwards, so I leave and feel really emotionally depleted, and it was like there was nobody to, not that I wanted people to say, wow, you were amazing, but I wanted to talk about it, or to say, what was your experience watching
you? You were amazing. That was the first time I saw you.
But, you know, it was more like just wanting to say, I had this amazing experience. What was your experience? Like, really wanting to have a dialogue about it. That's a show. Usually I hate talkbacks.
But you would have liked that.
But, yeah, that one, I think I really would have enjoyed a talkback with the audience.
Do you ever wish you could just say to Eric, okay, let me handle this?
Definitely. There, like, it's, again, it's that delicate balance where it's like you want to feel that the director has a vision, but at the same time you want to be left enough alone so that you can create something. Like, it's oftentimes enough for the director to say, this, you know, think about this and still be true to the arc of the production, but to say, this is how I think everything fits together. Now go off and create, as opposed to micromanaging everything, like...
And what's interesting to me is, it's, I think what people don't realize is there's a learning curve with directing, you know what I mean? I remember the first play I directed, like, this one poor actress, I wouldn't even let her get through. But I guess that's what's interesting, like rehearsal, I don't know, like, as a breeding ground.
Good. Do you want to talk anymore? You're fucking done.
Do you have stuff to talk about?
I'm going to say goodbye. Thank you very much, Jennifer.
So yes, thank you, Jennifer.
Oh, you're welcome, Chris Munden and John Rosenberg.
Why did you have to say it like that?
Because I had to remember what your name was.
I totally saw it. You remembered his name. You couldn't remember my fucking name.
Sometimes two names, it's just too much.
That's right, I understand.
You know, because I have to remember last names as well as first names.
Why?
That's the whole thing. I'm so tired of working.
You've been listening to the Philadelphia Independent Theatre Podcast with your hosts Christopher Munden, John Rosenberg, and special guest Jennifer Summerfield.